The story you're about to hear on Love, Lust, Fear is true. Some names, places, and other identifying details may have changed to protect the storyteller. Love, Lust, Fear may contain graphic language and depictions of sensitive situations. Please listen with caution. Next on Love, Lust, Fear.
It was sort of like this older, mature guy, and he was a lot different than most of the guys that I had dated before. And so the first real sign for me that things were bad was I bent over to pick something up and he punched me in my butt and like knocked me over. And he was like, I just wanted to see how hard I could hit you. In the middle of my workday, I get this message. And she said, I'm really sorry to tell you this, but I think you should know that your husband and I have been having an affair for 2 years. He would text me, call me. He was like, who do you think you are? You're never allowed to leave me. You can't do this. I'm never going to leave you alone. He started stockpiling guns and knives and ammunition and like other weapons. And so I remember thinking like, he's going to kill me.
In a small Pennsylvania town, just a few hundred miles from the city of liberty, freedom, and brotherly love, lives a tight-knit community built on faith and family. It's the place where 19-year-old Justine and her family called home. Justine spent most of her childhood under the warmth and protection of her loving and supportive parents, a devout Roman Catholic couple. These high school sweethearts set an example of what a caring and respectful relationship looked like. So from an early age, Justine had already envisioned what a long-term couplehood should feel like. And then when a handsome, mature, and charismatic military man walked in the door to her parents' home, she felt immediately smitten and safe. But as their romance blossomed, he slowly began exhibiting a controlling pattern of abuse on Justine. Now the man she believed would be her protector was the husband she was forced to protect herself against.
My dad has sort of always just like invited his military friends to come meet his family. This guy came to our house. He knew my dad because they are both in the military. I had seen like a photo of him and my dad in their like army uniforms, like out in the field or something like that. The very first time I ever met him, I thought he was even better looking. He lived on his own. He worked for the military full time. So it was sort of like this older, mature guy. And he was a lot different than most of the guys that I had dated before. And so me being 19, I sort of had this very like romantic idea of relationships. So we exchanged, I think like Facebook profiles, and we would talk via Messenger. Then we eventually exchanged phone numbers. And we just started texting pretty regularly. And at first it was just pretty casual. Like he would ask what I was learning about in school and I would ask him like how his day was going. But then like it definitely got more flirty and he would tell me like how pretty I was. And, you know, it just sort of went from there. And then my level of affection and intimacy with previous relationships was really minor, like holding hands, hugging, maybe like a peck on the cheek, like very innocent. And so he was grabbing me around the waist and like pulling me in for these like really tight hugs and like kissing my neck. He wanted to be physically intimate right away. As a little bit of backstory, I was sexually assaulted as a child. And so a lot of physical intimacy for me was like very uncomfortable because I still had not, like I had been in therapy for years, but I had still not completely like processed it all. And so I actually like tried to explain that to him, like, hey, I was abused, you know, I don't really feel comfortable with this yet. Like we just started seeing each other. And his response to that was, yeah, I was abused too. It happens to a lot of people. It's really not a big deal. You just have to like bury it down and try to forget about it. But then the following month for Valentine's Day, I basically had a conversation with him saying like, so are are we dating? Like, are we boyfriend and girlfriend? Like, especially if you want me to be intimate, aside, I was raised devout Catholic, like hardcore, go to church every single Sunday, every holiday, blah, blah, blah. So in my mind, sex and intimacy was reserved for like marriage or like a very serious relationship. And so I basically said, like, listen, if this is just going to be like casual dating, like, I don't want to be intimate with you. And he basically was like, we don't have to like put a label on it or anything. But then later he texted me and just was like, yeah, sure, I guess we're boyfriend and girlfriend. Like, so immature. And I was just like, okay, I guess this is what it is. So I was still living at home and he actually lived about 2 hours away. We kept sort of doing the long distance dating, texting, talking on the phone, going back and forth to see each other like on weekends. The first real sign for me that things were bad was he came up to my parents' house to visit me and we were outside in my parents' like backyard. And I bent over to pick something up and he punched me in my butt and like knocked me over. And I was like, what was that? Like, why did you do that? Like, what the heck is going on? And he was like, I just wanted to see how hard I could hit you. And I just sort of was in this state of shock. And apparently like my parents had seen the whole thing. And so like they kind of confronted him about it, and I confronted him, and he started playing the victim. He was never wrong. So he acted like it wasn't a big deal, and I was blowing it out of proportion. And yeah, he like wouldn't then talk to me for like the rest of the time. I remember he left, and I thought, okay, well, I guess we're done dating now. Like, this isn't normal. And then he texted me later apologizing. He was like, I'm sorry for like how you reacted or something like that. Like, I'm sorry for the way you took it. My parents would like very gingerly tell me like, hey, I don't think he's treating you the way you should be treated. I just sort of like, again, pushed it aside, thought that like they just didn't know him as well as I did. Like, they're going to eventually see how wonderful he is. But like, they never outright said, we don't like him. They never outright said, you should stop dating him. Like, I think they were really, really, really worried. Literally, I think like a month or two after we had this conversation of them saying like, hey, we're really worried about you, he actually proposed. So it was Valentine's Day of my senior year of college. He was up visiting me and my family, and it was literally like 11 p.m. and my sister came up to my room and was like, hey, can you come downstairs? And I was like, okay. So my family was sitting in the living room, like in a circle, and he was like sort of sitting in the middle. And I thought like, is this like an intervention? Like, I thought somebody died. It was awful. I said, what is going on? And they were like, oh, we just wanted you to open your gifts from him. So I start like unwrapping these gifts, like sort of trying to figure out what's going on. And then like, I look up, and he's down on one knee and he has the ring. And I was in such a state of shock. We hadn't even like talked seriously about marriage or anything like that. So it felt like really out of nowhere. And I just kept saying like, are you serious? Is this like a prank? Like, I truly did not believe that he was legitimately proposing. My family was completely silent. They weren't congratulating us or hugging us or anything, which I went back upstairs to go to bed. And my mom and dad pulled me aside and they're like, hey, let's keep this on the down low for the time being. Don't post on social media. Like, don't make a big deal out of this time. I was like, what are you talking about? I'm getting married. I'm telling everyone. But we stayed engaged and I sort of slowly started telling my family and friends. I was talking to him sort of right around the time that I graduated. And he was like, so you're moving down here, right? And I was like, oh, I guess so. I hadn't really like planned on that. Like, I wasn't looking for jobs in his area. Like, I was looking in my hometown. So I did end up getting a job. I think within 3 months, of me like moving in and like starting this new job, we found out that he was getting deployed. So I was living in a new area that I didn't know at all, didn't know anybody but him. And so whenever he said like, you can't do something or you should do this, I just thought this is what you do in a relationship and I should listen to him because he's older and he knows better and he's going to be my husband. We were getting ready for him to deploy overseas. He was going to like a really rough area. There was that thought of like, if he doesn't make it, we were like, maybe we should just get married now, like in a quick courthouse ceremony, like we'll just be legally married. And then if something happens, at least I'm your wife. But the apartment was just in his name and all of like the utilities were just in his name. So like when he was gone, like I couldn't take care of anything. Anytime I would bring that up, he would be like, you just don't need to worry about it. It's fine. We were actively planning our wedding at this point. While he was deployed, I saved up over $10,000 to like put towards a wedding. We were also talking about buying a house. And he had told me that because of his deployment, he had a bunch of leave saved up. And so he was going to like take some time off work. And I was like, okay, that's fair. I think you deserve that. But what I didn't know is he wasn't getting paid for that time. So he was essentially just like sitting in our apartment, not working. And he was truly just blowing through our savings. Like he spent around $8,000 worth of like what I had saved up in just a couple months. He bought himself a brand new truck and then we bought our house. And then he decided that he wanted to renovate the house. And so like we just like he would buy new tools and stuff. So we just like, I think we incurred like $20,000 worth of debt in like 6 months. But we didn't end up going on a honeymoon because we couldn't afford it. But the few days leading up to the wedding, he was actually like super nice, super kind to me. And I thought, okay, this is it. Things are going to get better. We're getting married. Things are going to be great. Got married. And then during our reception, he spent all of his time with his friends, got insanely drunk, and spent pretty much no time with me during our wedding reception. And then we went back to our house because we couldn't like afford a hotel room or anything. And he invited his friends to stay the night with us at our house on our wedding night. And then the next day, he like woke me up and was like, hey, can you go make everybody breakfast and some coffee? And I was like, I guess so. And I was just doing anything that I could to like help better our financial situation. I went back to school to get my master's degree because I was trying to get another better job to bring in more income. Again, it was always back on me. Like I was always the problem. And no matter what I did, I was always wrong. So I would always have to like cook and clean and literally do like the landscaping, the laundry. I did all of it. It was never right. If I would wear makeup, he would say, who are you trying to impress? But then if I went a day without any makeup, he would tell me I looked really ugly without makeup. Our sexual intimacy completely dropped off because he was saying how ugly I was and how he wouldn't want me at all. Then when I started like losing weight again, we started being intimate, but it was like aggressive. It was whenever he wanted it. Like there were times where I would walk in the door, literally just getting home from work. And he would be like, okay, we're having sex right now. And I'd be like, I literally just walked in the house. But if I said no, he would throw a tantrum. And so then I would just relent. For the most part, he wasn't super physically aggressive with me. Like sometimes he would like pin me down. He would like grab my arms and like hold me still. Or like he would squeeze my hand so tight when we were in public that my hand like turned purple. And then he was also spending at least one night a week out with his friends, like at a bar or something. There were times where he would come home like hammered at like 3 a.m. and be like, you need to wake up. Why aren't you awake? You should be awake when I get home. Or why aren't you wearing like lingerie for me? Like it was just, everything was dialed up to like 100. And I was doing everything that I could just to like make it through another day. When people say walking on eggshells, that's how my life was at that point. A couple times I tried to leave. I was realizing that this wasn't healthy or safe, but every time I would be like packing things and he would just like show up. He would show up home early from work and I'd be like, where did you even come from? And he'd be like, what the hell do you think you're doing? I'm frozen in fear. So I'd be like, nothing. And he'd say like, where the fuck do you think you're going? Who do you think's going to take you in? You can't leave me. Divorce is not an option. And so I would stay because I was like terrified and started screaming in my face and shouting, tell me why I'm not a good husband. And was like crying these super fake crocodile tears. And I was just in such a state of shock. And I was also like really mad at this point too, because I was just so tired of it. And then like, because I wasn't pitying him, he got so angry and started just screaming in my face and said, you think you're being abused? At least I don't hit you. Some women are actually abused. And then not long after that, he started stockpiling guns and knives and ammunition and other weapons, which was absolutely terrifying. I know he was doing it on purpose. Like, he was obviously trying to scare me. I remember thinking, like, he's going to kill me. There were times where I would be laying in bed in the middle of the night and be like, I'm going to be a statistic. I'm going to wake up one morning and he's just going to decide that he's done with me living. And there were also times where like I would hide like a knife on my nightstand because I was terrified that I was going to have to defend myself in the middle of the night from him. There were times where I would wake up to him like trying to have sex with me or like pinning me down, or like he would wake up like screaming mad about something. So like life was just absolute chaos. How I was even like going to work and functioning, I like don't know. Things like that started happening and made me realize this isn't safe. I'm not safe. I was slowly, eventually starting to let things slip, like things that he would say, but I was not telling anybody the full context, like not even my family. Even though like I was trying to leave, I think that there was still like a reserved part of me that didn't really know what I was going to do when I left. Sure, I was packing my things, but where I was going to go from there, I had no idea. The thing that kind of was the straw that broke the camel's back, which is crazy because there had been like a million straws up to that point. I got a Snapchat message from a lady that I didn't really know. And it was like literally in the middle of my workday, I get this message. And she said, I'm really sorry to tell you this, but I think you should know that your husband and I have been having an affair for 2 years. And at first I was like, okay, this is fake. She had sent me screenshots and I was like, she like photoshopped these, like this can't be real. And then I started reading the messages and like things that he was saying to her were things that he used to say to me, like how much he cared about her and stuff. So I texted him and I said, who is this? How do you know her? And he was like, she's somebody I used to work with. What does it matter? And I said, well, she sent me screenshots saying you two are having an affair. And he was like, what are you talking about? Like, he started getting really angry. And then he like instantly called me and was like, how could you believe her? And I said, because she has screenshots and she's saying that she knows that she's not the only woman you've been with. So after him like freaking out for a little bit, he eventually confessed that he had never been faithful ever, even before we got married. And I said, okay, well, this is it. This is the end. There's no going forward after this. Like, things have been bad for a long time, but like, this is the end for me. And I said, don't come home. I need some time by myself. And he said, you can't keep me out of my own house. I'm coming home. So two of my friends met me at my house. We packed up literally just my stuff. I didn't take furniture. I didn't take pots and pans. I didn't take utensils, lamps, electronics, like not like I took my clothes, my shoes. I think I had taken like some things that like my grandparents had gave me, like religious memorabilia. But if you walked into the house and didn't know that he had a wife, you wouldn't know that like anything had been taken. My friends and I, we packed my car full and their two cars full and grabbed my pets and just went to my one friend's house because I didn't know where else to go. When he got to our house, he texted me saying, well, I wish I could have prepared for you to leave me and take everything. I texted back saying, I wish I could have prepared for you being a cheater and a liar. Again, it just made him like so much angrier. Like he just got super pissed by that. I called my mom and I told her what was going on. He drained our bank account. I was couch surfing with friends and I had no money and like no way to pay for anything because we were in so much debt that I couldn't even like get out a credit card in my own name. So very graciously, my mom gave me like one of her credit cards. And then a couple of my friends that I was staying with like would pay for things for me. Because the other issue was I used the one credit card of ours to get gas. And he saw the transaction, was like, I know where you are. So then I was like terrified of him knowing my location. And honestly, like I initially thought like, okay, I am free from him. Life is only going to get better from here on out. But things got a lot worse before they got better. He would text me, call me, like I would block his number. And then because he was in the military and he had like so many connections, he would like get another number or like use somebody else's phone, or he would have his friends call and text me. I had some of his friends reaching out on Facebook Messenger. One friend of his said, it's just a mistake and what you're doing is wrong and you can't like hold this against him. A couple of his friends reached out to me and were saying like inappropriate things, like to see if I was going to cheat. I have no idea, but I was blocking calls and numbers and stuff like nonstop for at least a month. Then he would start emailing me from like different email accounts in like the middle of the night. Like I would wake up to go to work in the morning and I would have 15 new emails that were sent at like 2 a.m. from him. When he found out I got an attorney, he was like, who do you think you are? You're never allowed to leave me. You can't do this. I'm never going to leave you alone. You can't say no to me. He just kept harassing me. And then I was at a friend's house the one night and he showed up to their house with a massive bouquet of flowers. Thankfully, the friend's house that I was staying at, literally her backyard backed up to a fire station. So I was able to get out without him seeing me and went to the fire station. And then they were able to take me to the police station and then to a women's shelter where I got an advocate and filed for a restraining order. Even though like he was threatening me, he had an arsenal of weapons. I ended up having to reach out to his commanding officers because he was threatening me so much and threatening to kill himself. And because he had such a stockpile of weapons, I thought he was going to do it. So his boss had to come to his house and take all of his weapons from him because they thought he was a danger to me and to himself. But somehow I was denied a restraining order in all of that. He knew where I worked and I was afraid he was just going to like show up. So they had to have like a security guy sort of like on duty where I was working. I ended up having to like legitimately move back home. I like completely changed jobs, started working somewhere completely new and moved back in with my parents because that is how terrified I was. He knew where my parents lived, but I thought at least if I'm with my parents. I'm not alone. He did end up coming all the way to my hometown one time and showed up to my grandmother's house thinking that we were all there and left another bouquet of flowers at my grandmother's house. So thankfully at that point, my attorney was able to file a cease and desist order against him. And I think the only reason that he sort of actually listened, because my attorney had been telling him to leave me alone and he was not cooperating. If he had to go to court, he could have lost his military job, which was like a huge point of pride for him. He kept doing everything that he could to delay our divorce proceedings. I filed for a no contest divorce because I didn't care at that point about getting spousal support. I didn't care about any of that. I just wanted to like move on with my life. I thought, I don't want to have any ties to you whatsoever. But he would either not sign paperwork, or he would sign it incorrectly, or he would like sign it without a notary. He would send things in late. He never got an attorney, and he would constantly play like the military card. He showed up to the one court hearing in like his dress blues military uniform. But my attorney was like, okay, we're done playing his games. We're now going to file for spousal support. So he has to pay you every month until the divorce is finalized. So he was going to have to pay me a lot of money. And that's what finally got him to agree to everything. And I remember walking into the courthouse with my attorney. We get up to the room and I see him at a distance. And I was like, I can't do this. So they had a sheriff's deputy walk me down to like a separate sitting room and sit with me there because I was so terrified to see him. And whenever the hearing was over, the judge ruled against him and essentially gave him like 30 days to settle everything or else he was going to have a warrant out for his arrest and he would lose his military job. So he did eventually get that done. But when the court hearing was over, so I'm sitting in a room like down the hall with this sheriff's deputy and he comes walking by the room. And I don't think he realized the sheriff's deputy was there with me because initially like he looked in like directly at me. And then the sheriff's deputy sort of stood in like the doorway and he like bolted, like he took off. And that was the last time that I ever saw him. And he is remarried, has stepchildren, and has been married since like a year after we got divorced. Like a year or so ago that he was trying to get money from me and he's still trying to like contact me and bother me.
When I spoke with Justine, I wanted to know how her ex-husband's stature in the military impacted her feelings of safety and security, and if she could provide any background details about how he was perceived amongst his peers.
Pretty much anybody that I had dated up until this point, it was mostly just like high school relationships, or I dated one guy like my freshman year of college, but we all lived with our parents. So yeah, it was like this different level at that point. And yeah, like him being military, absolutely. I thought much more highly of him because of that. Yeah, I felt very safe being there initially. It's awful to know this now, and I didn't know it at the time, but his nickname in the military was the Snake because he could charm anyone. And he was a smooth talker. Like he could truly make anybody his friend in the moment. People really liked being with him. He had a like very intoxicating aura about him.
And how her family ultimately shaped her motivations, decisions, and expectations of relationships and romance.
Well, my parents and my grandparents all had really healthy, really loving relationships. My parents were actually high school sweethearts, and my dad has always like treated my mom really, 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 really well. I think just seeing like the people around me have these beautiful, wonderful relationships, I just sort of assumed that this is what you do in life, especially coming from a smaller town. Like, that is kind of what you're expected to do. Like, you go to college, you get married, you have kids, you get a job, and that's kind of like what you do. He would always say, like, I needed to stop comparing our relationship to the experiences of healthy relationships that I had seen. Now, he didn't say healthy relationships because he didn't want me to think that ours wasn't healthy. But yeah, he would just constantly say like, well, that's just not everybody's experience. And this is just how our relationship is going to be.
And I also wanted to know how she found the strength to leave and what kind of resources she had at her disposal.
Not too long before I left him, I became really good friends with one of my coworkers. And I used to spend time with her. And she was kind of the only person at that time who knew that things weren't great in my marriage. Anytime things were bad at home, if I needed a place to go, I would go to her house. And I don't know why, but for me, like knowing that he had been having so many affairs with many different women over the years really just made me snap. Because up until that point, I was still like a very devout Catholic. And in the Catholic Church, like that is a huge sin. Like abuse is obviously like a sin too, but adultery is an absolute no-no. But I think the biggest thing was I was so tired of the abuse and the trauma and walking on eggshells and living in fear that it was almost like this was my out. And we had miscarried previously. And all I can think was like the universe was like saving me somehow, because legitimately we were going to start trying for kids. And I cannot imagine. I have heard stories from other survivors who have had kids and how difficult a process that is. If you're willing to treat your spouse so poorly, nobody can say like, oh, you won't do that to your kids too.
I asked her about her healing process and how her family reacted after she left her ex-husband.
I actually went to see a specialist whose area of expertise was women who are leaving severely abusive relationships. And when I first started telling her what was going on, she was like, he is a classic narcissist who preys on women who he knows he can manipulate. And you being so much younger and not having any experience in the relationship world was just like candy for him, essentially, that he just couldn't essentially leave me alone at that point. And for a brief period of time, I truly thought that if I divorced him, that my family was going to like disown me, because they were devout Catholics and you don't get divorced in the Catholic Church. And everybody around me was having these beautiful, loving relationships. And so I thought like I was going to be the black sheep of the family. But it's crazy, because as soon as I called my mom the day that I left him, it was like a weight had been lifted off her shoulders. And she was just like, I am so glad that you are safe and that you're away from him. And we are going to do everything that we can to help you. My parents, truly, they were such a blessing during that time, because I would not have been able to get through all of it by myself. Like even with friends and like therapy, like my family really, really had my back. And I wish I would have seen that sooner. I wish I would have realized that they were never going to abandon me or disown me, that they were always there to help me. And that's something that I try to tell other survivors who are maybe like just coming out of it, is that the people who actually care about you are going to be there no matter what. And you should listen to them. I also did some of my own research online and like would join like Facebook support groups and things like that. I decided that I needed to take at least a year to work on myself. Somebody once told me that when you leave an abusive relationship, you should spend at least 1 month alone for every year that you were with them. So because he and I had been together for 9 years, I was like, okay, 9 months at a minimum.
And finally, when she was ready to start dating again, what were the boundaries she set into place? And how did she communicate this to potential partners?
So I know that most people don't like laying everything out on the table, but I would be upfront with them and say, like, hey, I was married before. Also, towards the end of my marriage, I also learned more about my own sexuality, that I wasn't straight. And so, like, I would also be very open about that when I started dating. When I met my fiance, he was kind of like already aware that, like, okay, she's been married before and she's part of the queer community. And then just sort of slowly over time, like, I would let him in on things, especially as we started sort of getting a little bit more serious. I would have to tell him that there were certain triggers that I still had. And like really learning to put myself first and just like, I hate to say the term, but like learning to love myself again, because there had just been so many years of hearing how I was the bad one. I was the bad person. And so it took me a long time to like break myself of that habit of thinking that I was always in the wrong. And I've had a couple friends very recently who have gone through something similar. And I am very honest with them. And I say, like, listen, it's going to be rough for a while, but I promise it will get better. You just have to get through these rough patches.
Justine was barely out of high school and revealed she was too young and inexperienced to properly navigate through the toxic behavior from the man she married. While she did have a very supportive family, once her partner became abusive, she felt ashamed that she wasn't living up to their standards for a healthy relationship. Early on, even though her family knew something was wrong with this man, they didn't want to pressure her and allowed her to make her own decisions. But it's a good thing they stayed close and offered her sound advice. Trying to live up to the standards that your role model set or the principles of your faith can put you in a position to avoid seeking support in a crisis. While her faith played a significant part in her belief that this man could change, at the same time, it fueled her strength to leave him once she discovered his adulterous ways. There won't always be a sign from the universe, but if you can turn to those closest to you, people you trust, in those moments of confusion, they may be able to offer you some clarity. Until next time, I'm Jake Deptula, and this is Love, Lust, Fear. Every guest featured on Love, Lust, Fear selects a charity or organization to share. Please check the show notes on this episode for more details. If you or someone you know is being abused by a partner, there is help available. The National Domestic Violence Hotline provides essential tools and support to help survivors of domestic violence. Just call 1-800-799-SAFE. That's 1-800-799-7233. Or you can text START to 88788. If you'd like to be a guest on Love, Lust, Fear and share your personal dating and relationship story, you can email us at lovelustfearpod@gmail.com or DM us on Instagram at lovelustfearpod. Disclaimer, the information shared on this podcast should not be considered as professional advice or a substitute for seeking professional advice.